All right, Mots, we are back, episode 178 of the Rink Shrinks. What do you say? You ready to go?
Let's go.
This episode is presented by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and the NHL playoffs. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts.
So what's going on? You got your color commentating debut under your belt.
Yeah.
That's the exciting news. But what else is going on, man?
No, nothing. Just a lot of Yeah, it was a quick little trip down to New York over the weekend, which was cool. It was, Saturday morning flight down, and then it was action packed. It was right into it. The Chicklets guys obviously do an unbelievable job with that. It was honestly, I wasn't really sure what I was walking into just because I hadn't done it before. And it was super professional, super organized. From the green rooms to, just the scripts to Jake Marsh, the play-by-play guy, with like details about every single player on both teams, handing out lineup cards. And, I try to do a little preparation in my on my own, but I'm like, these are way better stats than I. And I'm like, I've played against some of these guys, you know what I mean? But yeah. It was really cool. Obviously, right when I get in there, Merle's and Army are like, hey, this is like, pro, like you got to get the makeup done. I'm like, dude, there needs to be a lot more makeup. There's not enough makeup in the world to make this this face look pretty. But it was a really cool experience. And
you looked great. You got your rouge on. You've got powdered up.
Exactly. Your experience with it, but it's my first time ever dealing with like the truck and headsets and cutting to people and clips coming up on the screen. But Merle's really helped out, and Jeff Lowe, who kind of hosted the intermission, he was awesome at kind of steering the ship, driving the bus, being that Liam McHugh type of personality in between periods. So it was fantastic. And from top to bottom, the overall experience, Mots, like I'm telling you, I've played in Boston Police versus Boston Fire games. This is a 50th anniversary, sold out. Like, I mean, we got there. The game was at 5. We probably got over there at 2 o'clock, tailgating, going. It was like a football game. I think the fans actually like it being on Long Island because they have that tailgating factor. But and then once the gates open, it was just everybody in the building. Place was just absolutely bonkers. And then just so much history between each team and so much history. Obviously, the passing of Officer Jonathan Diller recently. Just adding a little extra to the game, especially for the police department. Warm-ups looked like one of those Where's Waldo videos. Like there was about 1,000 guys for each team. They must let people that have, kind of try out or play with them occasionally and stuff. But then they dwindled things down. Obviously, the game was the game. The fire got off to a good start, and the police ended up coming back. But it was great hockey. It was competitive. My only argument was it. A lot of whistles. It was kind of a long game, but it is what it is, So we missed like the first half of the Bees game, which that started at 8, but then we went over to Borelli's and watched the game. So it was a great experience. It really was.
That's awesome. And it's kind of cool to see how things work behind the scenes as well.
Big time. Yeah. I know you've got a lot of experience doing, but I didn't have a clue. I've never done anything like it.
Yeah. And it's a team within a team, the production crew, cueing you when to chime in. It is a skill set, and you get better with more reps. I still stink at it, but at the end of the day, it is another way to stay in the game. And it's awesome that you had that experience to be able to get down there and see a few of the boys and take in some good rivalry hockey between the the fire department and the police. So at the end of the day, I think you might have a future after seeing some of those clips. So stay on it, kid.
Yeah, big time. Well, bright future. Stick to my day job. Hmm. But the other thing I was going to say was the pregame ceremonies, just like from the national anthems to just honoring fallen heroes on both sides, right? Was really, really special. And again, just 50 years of it, the tradition, the family, the people that we met kind of in the stands just around, and, you know, fans talking, hey, you know, whether it was Rink Shrinks or Chicklets, but they just, it was like hockey people just coming together. And I was talking to a few different people. It was like, this was like the hottest ticket in town. Like, there was like, it was harder to get a ticket to that game than it was to the Knicks game on the same night, which is crazy.
It's crazy, but it's awesome. It shows, you know, number one, the hockey community. We talk about that all the time, but, you know, and then the brotherhood of both departments, right?
Yeah.
And you combine the two, and, you know, everyone's so tight knit, you know, families, it runs in families, and everyone's proud to, you know, wear a badge or, you know, be, you know, representing the city in some capacity. And, you know, so then when you put it all together and you're able to tailgate too, it's a win-win for everyone.
And that Garden City's nice, Mots. I know I had never been. The only time I was on Long Island is just basically going to a game, but we spent a little time and stayed in the outskirts there. That's a really nice area.
Yeah, we used to stay at that Marriott sometimes, right? Yep. And then as far as that Garden City, the Garden City Hotel is another spot. And
that's where we stayed, the Garden City Hotel.
Yep.
Yeah. Not the one where you and I stayed for Keith's game.
No, right. I lived there for a little bit. And actually, when I was a youngster, I had a tournament down there, and I met Jake the Snake Roberts in the hotel lobby. Yeah.
That's pretty big time.
Yeah. He was going to, you know, use the facilities. And I was like, oh, no way. Cause like they had a big
snake.
Yeah, exactly. So, but as far as Garden City, it's like a beautiful area. Our buddy Marty Reisner lives down there. And, you know, a lot of the guys that played for the Islanders, you know, and stuck around still live in that area. It's a really nice spot. Good little downtown. But, I was really happy to see that you had the footage pumping out, you know, and getting it out.
I didn't want you to get to call me out. I had to get some things going, and then they have so much going on too. I like, all right, yeah, I should take a video of this too. And so it was good to get out on the social stuff. And, but that's enough about me. What about you? How's the weekend? How's springtime coming in?
Ah, it's good. The CEO and two of the girls were down in Florida. I was able to, you know, spend some time with my oldest daughter, Roan, take her to Half Price Sushi. And I put a beating on that with, you know, her and her boyfriend. Actually hit the driving range.
Again?
I think this is the year. I think this is the
year. How many years have we been doing this?
A lot. But, kind of a quiet weekend as far as that. And then my daughter Brooke comes fresh off a plane and gets right into the mix with the Town Cup, really cool tournament on the South Shore here, you know, south of Boston. And they're going to the finals tomorrow night. So
awesome.
Yeah, I just get a little championship. But it's kind of a cool setup. So I'll describe it real quick. It's, you know, each town fields a team at every level, from mites all the way to over 40, like men's league.
Right.
And back when I was playing, you know, it'd be like under 40, and then there was like an over 40, you know, a few years we played together, and a bunch of guys, and I was coaching as well. So each age group has like their own tournament. And then the town that has the most cumulative points wins the actual town cup. So it's like, you know, every level has to do their job to win the town cup. So, cool concept. And it's just cool to be a part of, because all the kids may be playing on different teams, like whether it be a travel team or whatnot, and they get together, and whether it be boys and girls, you know, there's two separate divisions, but, you know, they get to play with each other because they're from the same town. So
yeah,
fun tournament for all. And, we'll have to give you an update next week about the championship.
Yeah, big time. And that's been going on now for quite some time. There's been little pop-ups here and there. I remember the different things, but I think, God, I can remember when I think it was Tommy McDonald and the crew down in the with the you know, the Breakers and Rockland and the Bog kind of got it off the ground. And great concept, and it's awesome that you guys are in the finals with Brooke's squad. So good luck to them. Hopefully they pull out a W. Maybe it's your turn. Get some footage when they're hoisting that trophy. Hopefully,
You know what?
Are you on the bench?
No, I'm not on the bench.
Oh, that's probably explains why they're winning.
I know. And I do have my pom poms though. So
there you go.
I'm like number one fan.
Just proud dad. Yeah. Eye black.
Yeah, you get the foam finger.
Go that's Dragons. Awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, well, good I'll let you know. I'll try and get some footage of them. Hopefully winning the cup. So we'll see.
I violated one of my own rules and I have to go out to Michigan Friday night for a little spring tournament.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a local tournament. Like we talk about.
No, I was in a vulnerable spot and the Little Thieves team, they reached out and it's not really a tournament. It's kind of like a series. They're playing a couple games Friday, two Friday, two Saturday, two Sunday. I'm going to make the plane ride out on Friday night. Liam's already going to be out there with one of the guys I coach with and another weekend of travel, but it won't be too bad. And the kids are all looking forward to it. They get pumped up. And again, I'm like the biggest hypocrite when it comes to summer tournaments and traveling. And, but this is the only one. And it's at least the great timing though, when the NFL drafts off also there this weekend.
So, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Maybe I can hit a couple draft parties or something.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, actually, J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback from Michigan.
Yeah.
I read a great article in The Athletic about him and his hockey career. Did you happen to catch that?
No, I didn't.
So he grew up in the Chicago area and credits a lot of his like athleticism and movement and, you know, reading plays, adjusting on the fly, avoiding hits, taking hits to hockey. If you get a chance, I'll try to send it to you. It's an interesting article. I didn't have any idea that he played hockey, and he seems like a great kid. Played, like tier one, tier two. Played for the, I'm trying to think of that, Chicago CYA, Chicago Young Americans. Was playing that all the way up to like basically high school age, and they talked about even trying to balance both sports. And I think he was a good enough athlete that similar to what you talk about with your teams, like during the fall, the coaches didn't mind him missing because he was, you know, obviously a stud. Football, yeah. He's a star football player. And even he accredited some of his toughness. I think it was like his freshman to sophomore year in high school. He like broke a finger right before Thanksgiving and ended up being able to come and play in the Thanksgiving Day football game and, you know, shattered his finger. So it was an interesting read. Sorry, that just popped into my head. But it was a good one. And just, again, kids being athletes, transferable skills is great.
That is a cool kind of translation to what we talk about. And, you know, he's going to go as a high pick in the draft and, you know, could fall. I mean, you never know. Like the Patriots, I've been listening to some of the talk radio, and it's just kind of nonsense, like how they go around and round. You know, yeah. I had to shut it off. But there is a lot of movement that could happen, so – it's always good to keep your eyes and ears open with other sports as well. So, you know,
absolutely, hopefully
the Pats can do some damage at the draft and have a competitive team.
Yeah, we'll see. Thoughts on the Coyotes moving to Utah? Obviously, that got officially announced. It seems like Utah's really bought in. Obviously, a ton of season tickets, deposits have already been accepted. Ryan Smith and his wife, the owner there, they seem like they're super into it. So it's pretty exciting, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about possible landing spots or expansion. And Utah, you know, like when I looked it up, it was like the population isn't like huge, but there has been a professional team there for a very long time. So there is hockey roots there. It's not like an untapped hockey market per se. Right. So, I'm excited to see. And like, I'm excited more for the team name. I saw some names getting kicked around, but they kind of.
Have you seen any that have been kicked around?
Yeah, some funny ones, but.
Anything good?
Yeah, some of them you can't repeat.
Oh, so they're not going to happen.
No. But they were talking about I think it was the Transcontinental Railroad was finished there. They could tie something like that into it.
Is it the state flag or something? There's something with the bees, with bees?
Yeah, and also it was the Grizzlies, the Utah Grizzlies for the IHL and AHL team.
Yep. They always had decent jerseys.
Yeah, no, great jerseys. I got in. There was a crazy game there one time. I did get in a fight earlier in the game, but I was like one of the last guys left on the bench. It was like three of us. And then I was like, do I get in another one? Because I'm not, I don't want to be that guy, just like
right,
you know, the only guy like that didn't get kicked out of the game. But yeah, it was kind of a nonsense game, and you know, guys jumping other guys and you know, whatever. But that was my last time playing in Utah. But we but yeah, beautiful area. Guys that will be, I mean, guys that are gonna be moving from Arizona to Utah. It's the weather's a little different, but beautiful scenery and nice place to play.
Right. Yeah. No, it'll be exciting. I played some minor league games out there as well. So it was definitely pretty cool. And we'll see. It'll be interesting with the name. And I think RA was calling him like the Buzz because of the bees. He was trying to tie in all that. He's like, you got the Jazz and now and the Bees and, you know, the Buzz. I'm like, all right. Yeah. Sounds good. I'm like, yeah. I'm terrible at picking names.
Who knows?
Yeah. I have no idea. Thoughts on the NHL playoffs so far? I mean, for me, Mots, this is like the best 2 weeks of the year. It's four games every night. Mm-hmm. The excitement. It's like March Madness for hockey fans. It's unbelievable. And the game's been great.
Really good games. And it's so tough to like pick winners, you know, like because everyone's so tight, right? You know, so you got some teams that might be favored. But that Vegas-Dallas series kind of, I mean, I think there's – whoever comes out of that will be have a strong chance of contending for the cup. And, you know, like the Bees are, you know, just kind of finding their game a bit. And game one played a really strong game. Game two let their foot off the gas. Matthews with an unbelievable goal from the LU pass from Domi. That was really cool to watch.
Can't let him behind you.
No. Yeah, you got to be aware, right? Or push him offside before the puck gets there.
Yeah.
Do something. But yeah, no, it's an exciting time of year to be a hockey fan. Like you said, every other night or every night, you know, and let's just say your team is going every other night. You get to watch hockey and high-level hockey. And what we talk about all the time is getting everyone's best shift. So when you see, like, the guys finishing checks on the forecheck, finishing checks defensively, taking angles, blocking shots, the buy-in is there every single shift. And it's really the closest thing that you'll see to players and teams playing how the coach actually wants you to play. You know, that's what I always said. I was like, you get everyone's best shift, but like their attention to detail, you know, like the stuff that we talk about all the time about like this young development, you know, for kids to try and get it. I mean, these are pros that are executing the get it part of it because right. they do get it. They understand the pressure areas of the ice, gaining a zone when there's no play to be made. And really just valuing the puck and puck management that is so crucial because when there's turnovers, is you know, usually bad things happen. So, but it's been really cool to watch like little intricacies, the matchups. Matchups are huge in the playoffs. So home ice is, that's the biggest thing about the home ice advantage, the last change and who you can get out on the ice.
Right. And face offs and things like that are just that important. But it really is. It's exciting. And it's the hottest part is trying to stay up and watch these games. Not like I'm up early. I know you're up early and I'm sitting there. It's like 9:30 at night. And I'm like just head bobbing on the couch. Joanna's yelling, are you going to come to bed? Like, don't fall asleep on the couch again, you know. But it's like it's just it's awesome. Then you wake up early in the morning, you're like checking the scores, watching highlights, trying to fill yourself in. And all these games, there really has been a bunch of wild ones. Obviously, that Winnipeg-Colorado series, that game one was insane. Obviously, you know, Winnipeg pulled out the win, then Colorado came back in two, and just a bunch of different series. Obviously, the Rangers are kind of, you know, they look pretty good as well, and the Carolina series. But it's just... it's great hockey. It's going to be interesting. I think this first round of 16 of everybody is like, wow. And then things kind of settle in and the injuries and obviously Florida, Tampa, that series, those games have been great. It's like,
I bought a couple of those saves by Bob.
Oh my God. That was ridiculous. And what about the Islanders blowing the lead the other night? And that, I think I saw a stat. They were like 96-0 in playoff games when they were up three by three goals. So just absolutely wild type of events going on, but that's what happens, and it's awesome.
It really is exciting hockey all around. And McDavid, again, I mean, 5 assists, like, just
Not bad.
Just kind of just video gaming it out there, but he's just so
casual five.
Yeah, I mean, he draws players to him, and you know, you see it. And again, this was what I said about when I was playing, and people would ask me about Crosby and Ovechkin. Mm-hmm. Ovechkin, it took him some time to realize that, you know, even though he's so individually talented and would really will his way individually to try and make something happen, there are layers of support defensively. So if I got beat, you know, someone else is coming to help or whatever, where if, you know, Crosby kind of figured it out a little bit quicker, where, or just a different type of player, where if two guys are kind of going to him, someone else is open, right? So he would be able to find guys like that. But what you're seeing is, you know, that level of intensity, you know, ramped up in like what I said, was that team play and specialty teams are the biggest thing that, you know, really can separate you in the playoffs as well.
Right. Oh, big time. It's great stuff. And it's going to be exciting to see what happens in all these series. Sparks is the at-home or on-the-road skate shop machine. Make sure you take advantage of that BY Mott's $50 off Sparks sharpening code. That's huge. I was talking to a buddy whose son's just getting into the game, and he's like, dude, you guys sucked me in. I got a Sparks machine. I love it. I got it all set up. He's like, my six-year-old can almost do it on his own. Like, that's how easy it is. And we talked about it for about 10, 15 minutes. It's just going back and forth. He couldn't believe how easy it was and how good it was. So again, be like my buddy, head over to sparkshockey.com, use that BY Mott's $50 off promo code, and you will not regret it.
Yeah. Buzz them up. I mean, you're demonstrating the other night, and you're like, oh, I got to buzz my skates. You've been on them.
Yeah, we've been on them quite a bit, and you're doing some backward skating and, like, you know, a little
trust in the edges.
Trust in the edges, real boy.
Get on that outside edge. Yeah. You know? So make sure you check out sparkshockey.com and order your machine today.
That's a good reminder. I got to make sure I hit the skates before we get on the ice Monday night. Thanks, Mott. Yeah. What about Thatcher Demko? It was tough to see him go out for the first. You know, it looks like he's going to be out for the first round. Obviously, the Canucks have kind of had a tough run with some goalies getting injured, dating back to, you know, Markstrom. That's how Demko ended up kind of taking over Ryan Miller, former guest Corey Schneider, but a little bad luck, and hopefully they can, they can still come through. I like them, and I think Rick Tocchet's done a great job with them this season.
Yeah, and, you know, Demko, former Eagle, you always, like, root for guys.
Another beast. Yeah.
Yeah, so as far as, just the unfortunate timing of it, you know, he's such a strong goalie and a backbone of that team. We always say that, you know, you build from the goal out, and, you know, but on the flip side, you know, what you mentioned when Markstrom got hurt, it was his chance to step in and take over the net. Mm-hmm. So there's opportunities there for other players to come in and kind of claim their spot. But I would say that's really going to hurt them.
Yeah.
Because he's been,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, they lost the first one with Casey DeSmith in the net, but hopefully they can rebound. And Nashville's obviously got a great team too. So they've played well the second half of the year. They really have.
Yeah, Nashville was rolling down the stretch there. I don't know if you saw it, but there was like a flight, air traffic control or something.
I didn't see it.
It was just, he's like, flying in whatever flight number, all this stuff. And he's like, who you got? And I think it was, I'm not sure of the team, but he's like, to make sure you remind them that the Preds are on a heater. Like, these guys are talking amongst themselves. And so it's just, Nashville was, it put themselves in a great position down the stretch, playing really good hockey, and they've carried it over into the playoffs. So we'll see how things shake out now.
Big time, big time. Franklin is the official street hockey partner of the National Hockey League. Check out their line of official NHL street hockey games and training equipment at franklinsports.com today. Now's the time of year to make sure you get that stuff. The weather's getting nice. Make sure you're working on those stick handling tools and getting those reps in. Well, you're not necessarily on the ice, but on the street, right? That's where you want to get better. That's how you improve in the offseason.
Yeah, I was standing with my son at Brooks' game, and he's like, yeah, we got to get her out in the driveway, you know, working on the mittens. You know, you don't need to be on the ice to work on your skills. So make sure you check out franklinsports.com to get all your street hockey training equipment.
What about some coaching changes here? Lindy Ruff hired back as the Buffalo Sabres coach. Is that a, you know, recycle job or what?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, guys that have played for him really, you know, like his approach. He likes to be aggressive and lets them play, but he requires them to really back check, you know, with, so you can go all out at the net. Like I remember, I think I mentioned this before, but, you know, so say if it's a 3-on-2 and I'm the weak side D in the middle and the puck's, you know, coming into the zone, usually it's just center lane drive, you know,
right.
You have to work. But they drove two, so it makes it very difficult for the back checking forward to pick someone up. And then you have to kind of pick. You want to take the most dangerous guy, but a lot of times they would find a little seam or it would be off the pad. And it made it difficult to defend. But you watch Jersey when he was coaching there, and they had a similar kind of approach. But and he wanted to D up the ice. He wanted offense, but he just really required, if you're going to make that effort to go to the net, you have to make even more of an effort to get back. So, you know, he's been there before. He's played there. I mean, yeah. He calls it home. So I'm sure that his relationship with the organization really played a factor in that. But they have a really good core of players coming into their prime of their careers here. So they need someone to really get him over the hump.
Right. Yeah. Another coaching change, obviously, former guest Mike Greer had to let go David Quinn in San Jose, which, you know, a couple terriers. I know that wasn't an easy decision, but the Sharks had a tough year. And so, unfortunately, we've talked about it before. Sometimes the head coach has to be the scapegoat.
Yeah, it's difficult because, you know, you watch some of their games and like they had flashes of really good play, but just like really no depth to withstand, you know, just like a consistent approach to a game. You know, they would, you know, have a push, you know, offensively, defensively, they seem like they're somewhat overmatched consistently. And you saw it on the score sheet throughout the season.
They lost by a couple touchdowns.
Games. Yeah. Early on in the season, that was tough.
That was a rough one.
But yeah, I'm sure that dynamic between Greasy and Coach Quinn, you know, it's an honest conversation. It's a business. And I'm sure he will land on his feet. He's a good coach, great guy. So we wish him the best.
I wonder if they go after hard David Kyle from Michigan. I'm sorry, from Denver.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean,
I just wonder. I mean, just I guess it's another guy that's got college roots. You just don't know. It's tough. But if I think if I was a GM of an organization, like if I was Buffalo, I would have went after a guy like Kyle over Lindy Ruff, who's been there before. Yeah. And he's been, you know, he's kind of
agreed.
I mean, he's been around for a long time. And now San Jose, it's the same thing. I think I'd do everything in my powers to kind of sway a guy like, you know, Kyle out of college and into that, or you just don't know. It's difficult, but that would be my prediction. That would be my target hire.
Yeah.
He probably is looking at the roster going, yeah, maybe I'll wait another few years till they actually get like, you know, a couple more high picks and get some depth in the organization. Why would I set myself up for failure like this?
Yeah, it's a kind of a tough situation to walk into, but he, I read something where he wasn't sure if he was ready, you know, and it could just be posturing, but he's done a really great job at Denver, very prepared, world juniors. He knows how to handle top end talent. And he has good structure to his approach as a coach, and he can translate his message to the players. So I think he'd be a great candidate. I don't know if he's ready or if he thinks he's ready. So
right.
I'm sure Mike Greer is going to be on the telephone with him, at least kicking the tires.
Absolutely. It'd be interesting with that. Well, we have a great guest coming up, Rob Schremp, and we're looking forward to chatting with him. So this interview is brought to you by TSR Hockey, located up in tax-free Salem, New Hampshire, where you can stock up on all your equipment needs. Make sure you hit up the team store, 603-912-5970. Ask for Mike or Dave, and they will hook you up. You can also visit their website, tsrhockey.com, for all your shopping needs. And make sure if you do hit up the store, you tell them the Rink Shrink sent you. And now time for the interview with Robbie Schremp.
And our next guest on the Rink Shrinks podcast, a veteran of 114 NHL games, toured the globe playing professionally, a first-round draft pick in the 2004 NHL entry draft by the Edmonton Oilers, good friend Robbie Schremp. Thanks for joining us tonight, buddy. And I know you're busy, but I appreciate you taking the time.
No problem, but it's good to see you guys, and it's good to meet you, Brian. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to get on here and seeing you guys' stuff, and been following you guys for a while, so it's excited to get on here and get a little hockey chatter going.
No, we're pumped, and obviously I remember you as a player. I remember you showing up to the Hingham rink. You were a few years younger than me. You were about 86 birthday, right?
Yeah.
And you showed up to the Hingham rink for some, you know, summer hockey tournament. And I look across the red line and you got the stick and you're like, literally not stick handling. You had the puck in the air doing crazy lacrosse type stuff. I'm like, who the hell is this kid? And they're like, oh, dude, wait till you see the mitts on this guy. But, you know, you made an impression and obviously had such a great career and, you know, followed you throughout. So welcome. And where are you right now?
I'm in Hong Kong. Yeah. So there's a tournament here right now. It's the end of the season kind of tournament called the Mega Fives tournament. So I'm over here running that and coaching our teams up. So I've been here for the year, came here last August with my family. So different place in the world and another place to put on the map where I've been the Johnny Cash, I've been everywhere man song kind of applies to my path here.
That's unbelievable. Amazing. Love to see he's got to get extra pages in the passport.
Well, you mind taking us back to the early Rob Schremp days and kind of how you fell in love with the game and maybe some of your early influences and starting out playing hockey?
Yeah, no, I grew up playing everything when I was young, you know, upstate New York, Fulton, New York. You know, it's like the winter season would come, you know, you get the fall and the winter would come. So it's playing every kind of sport, played lacrosse, played baseball, played hockey. I wrestled. The wrestling story is kind of priceless. That lasted not very long. It's we have a really good wrestling team. That's like a very good wrestling area. We had a good family called the LeVay family. And we grew up with like their kid was 1 year older. And the dads are real passionate about wrestling. So they put us in it. And, you know, I thought I was pretty good at it. And Josh was like very good at it. That's Josh LeVay. He's a year older than me. And we got in one tournament. He pinned me in like 4 seconds, 5 seconds. And I was like, screw this. I'm done. Not doing the wrestling thing. Yeah, it was like I had no chance. He wound up being a really good wrestler in high school and stuff. But so I did a lot of things. And for me, hockey was sort of just a winter sport. I didn't really have like I liked it a lot. Of course, it was fun to get the, you know, when the snow started falling and, you know, winter was coming, you put the hockey gear on and signups and that stuff. It was awesome. It was exciting, but I wasn't like this crazy AAA kind of guy or, you know, anything like that. It was just, you know, kind of a travel team and, you know, there was no letters on it, right? Travel team in upstate New York means like you play, you know, usually teams about 45 minutes outside your town. And then like a big tournament was going to the Pepsi tournament in Buffalo and getting a chance to go to a Sabres game. And that was like the holy grail to us seeing Dominic Hasek and I remember those days, you know, thoroughly. And then when I was about 10 years old, really, it took a turn for me personally when the guy named Don Kernan bought the Fulton Ice Rink right in my hometown and took it over from the city. And, you know, trying to make a long story short, but my dad was getting our skate sharpened one day and he said he's walking through the rink and all of a sudden he just heard this like crack of the whip snap and then the sound of the crossbar. And he's like, I never heard anything like that. And you look out there and it's this Donnie Kernan Jr., the owner's son, just snapping pucks around. And immediately my dad went over was like, hey, can you teach my kids how to shoot? And, you know, to this day, through all this, you know, journey through hockey, Donnie Kerner Jr. is the best shooter of the hockey puck I've ever seen in my life. And that's, you know, obviously through the NHL, KHL, like you go down, I've seen a lot of people shoot the hockey puck. Donnie Kerner had this shot on him that was unbelievable. His release was just sick. And you see a lot of guys from upstate New York, actually the Syracuse area, they can shoot the puck. You know what I mean? Like that's one, the offense and shooting the puck. And it comes from Don Kerner and his son, Donnie Kerner. So I was very fortunate to run into them and have them take over that rink. And the next thing is, you know, Don Kernan Sr. just told my dad, like, anytime Robbie wants to go on the ice, he's welcome. And he meant it. Like, if there was 10 minutes between Zambonis, I was out on the ice. If there was a team that was willing to have me, I was out on the ice. So it was a really kind of a lucky bounce for us. And that's when I really fell in love with the game. And I got obsessed. And I started spending, like, 5-6 hours a day at the rink. As soon as I get out of school, go right there, pick up some extra, watch the high school team, and then try to beg to get on with the little kids and try to get, you know, other teams, whoever I can get on the ice with. I just really was, you know, I turned into a super big rink rat.
That's great stuff. I mean, falling in love with the game, that, you know, that you just totally explained how it happens. You know, like you're playing so many different sports, but like you really got drawn to it through, you know, some, you know, influential kind of, say, you know, just a happening of someone buying a rink and being open to you getting on the ice and having that opportunity to have like free ice and took advantage of it. That's great stuff. I love that.
It was a second home to me, really. It was awesome. Like Donnie Kernan Jr. And the guy named Blair White, you know, they were like big brothers to me. They were, you know, a lot older. I was, I think 10, 11 years old. They were mid 20s. So, you know, they really looked after me, and we had, you know, I have 3 siblings, and we were, you know, parents had a lot of stuff going on. So it was free babysitting that just dropped me off at the rink, you know, and I loved it. So it was like, it worked out perfect, you know, and, those guys really, they're awesome and looked after me really well. And you know, again, I got all the ice I wanted, and also it was like a friendship and a brotherhood kind of thing. And could keep me out of trouble, keep me away from girls as long as possible. That's a good thing.
Was it always just like go work on your craft, you know, work on your hands, work on your shooting? Or was it just like, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, do you think you really benefited, I guess, from that like unstructured, just going out and playing and shooting and just like having fun doing it?
Yeah, I think for me personally, it was, I got obsessed. I was obsessed with it. I loved it, you know. And if I couldn't, you know, Donnie Kernan Jr. would rip me because there was an area where I think it's like where the compressors are. I don't know exactly what it is, but there's an area of the rink where it freezes on the concrete by the Zamboni. And I would use that to shoot pucks. And I would put holes in the insulation because the insulation wasn't hidden. The net was there. And so Donnie would be like, that's enough, you know. And what I would do is just like squish an aluminum can down, and I would use the aluminum can to shoot. So it was like, I just loved it. And it felt, you know, once you see your shot going high as a young age, you see it go right under the bar, like that's really a good emotion. It was a lot of like my own kind of exploration.
Yeah, creativity.
And then I played the cross, and then I saw the Mike Legg goal. I don't even know how I saw it. I think it was a flash on ESPN, and I was like, oh, that's, you know, that's really cool. And then I thought like, well, why not just play lacrosse with it? Cause I played the cross and I tried it, and it was that same thing, picking it up how Mike did it. Like you put that pressure on the back of the puck and scoop it up. And it's like, oh, that's sick. Well, and I'm sure I wasn't saying that's sick, but whatever my thought was at 10 years old, that's cool. And then I was like, then I started cradling with it, and I was like, oh, it works. It doesn't go, like it doesn't fly off my stick. Cause I could, you know, I could cradle a lacrosse ball, and I was pretty good at lacrosse as well. But, and then it just kind of like that, you know, that genuine curiosity really took over for me. And it was just very, very random in some regard. And it wasn't calculated, you know, like I'm sure you guys get it a ton. Like there's, you know, people come up and talk to you about their 9 or 10 year old and what's the path. And I'm like, there's no path. Like there's no path. This is so random. I don't have a blueprint for you, buddy. Like drop your kid off at the rink for 5 hours. I don't know. Maybe he'll figure it out. But that's kind of how we got there, you know, so to speak. We didn't plan that, but it's just genuine curiosity. And then really those positive emotions being attached to, you know, figuring things out on your own a little bit.
So I have a question as far as like, you know, you're progressing through, you know, you're 10, 11, 12, you're playing, you know, in the Syracuse area and you're a U.S. kid. How does that process work and how did it work for you? Where you were exposed to junior hockey just by, you know, watching, or was there an influence for you, or was it just, you know, just a lot of attention and you know, from teams from the OHL that, you know, wanted, you know, a piece of you and have you have on their team? So could you just walk us through that whole kind of like dynamic? Because it is interesting because, you know, BY's brother played in the Q, and, you know, his path, you know, he was kind of going through, you know, prep schools around here, and, you know, he just kind of had the opportunity to go to college. But could you just walk us through kind of your path from, you know, kind of that minor hockey to the OHL?
Oh, for me, I was, again, very fortunate to have Tim Conley. He's from 10 miles from my house, Baldwinville, New York. And the moment I saw that guy on the ice, I remember, you know, very specifically the day I saw him, it was like magic. You know what I mean? It's almost like, I don't know if it's the right analogy. It's like when a little girl, I got a daughter now. So it's like when a little girl falls in love with the Frozen movie and you know, the main character, you know what I mean? Just like
Elsa. I don't even have daughters.
I know.
You try to play it off like a cool girl. I don't know. And then you start saying, the song.
Let it go. So Timmy, when he did this move, he did that move. It's one, not his, I don't want to say it's famous, but that movie he was sick at where he kind of fakes right and he throws it through his leg and goes left. He burned somebody out. And I think the skate was something along the lines of like the, Empire State Games skate. It was a tryout for that. And he was out there and it was like, there was nobody even near him. He was so sick. And I just remember being like, oh my God, that was amazing. So he was a big idol for me growing up. And again, he was Don Kernan's, you know, protege. They won the Tourney de Quebec together in, I think like 91 or something along those lines. Like they went up first American team to win it. And they had like Merle, I think Merle's was on it, and Conley to Bucktooth.
Didn't he play roommate like 3 years?
Crazy. He was so good, man.
Yeah,
that's the thing with Don Kernan was
you man, played a amazing. Couple of years too, right?
Yeah, I played 2 years. I played 85 and 86.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really fortunate. But so Timmy was, yeah, Timmy's in the, like his path was really carved. He carved it out for me, and like, I did a movie with Timmy and Wayne Gretzky and at their agency out when I was 12 years old. They invited me to come out and shoot a movie. Wayne Gretzky's Train to Win. It was so cool. Like I went from nobody, like literally nobody at 10, like we didn't want to be anybody. I didn't care. Like it was literally like, again, the snow starts falling and it's hockey season. That's how I thought about it. And then like 2 years later, I'm in a flight out to Orange County to go shoot a movie with Tim Conley. So, and Wayne Gretzky. So, you know, Timmy was actually above, obviously, Wayne Gretzky on my, like, who I got to hang out with. And, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, yeah. I got to get to hang out with Timmy. And they're like, yeah, Wayne Gretzky's there. I was like, yeah, that's cool, too. But Timmy's there, right? So it was so cool. And it was just very, again, Don Kern. It goes back to Don Kern and that rare, that random act, you know, that random occurrence of him getting that rink and then us, you know, linking up. But, so yeah, that was kind of Timmy really paved the path, and I was obsessed and I wanted to do what he did. And then the Syracuse Junior Crunch were right in Syracuse, so I got to watch. Back then it was called the Metro League, and it was really good hockey, but it was also like insanely barbaric.
Yeah,
I remember I was 11 years old and there was a game at the Lysander Arena, and it was against the Quinny Hawks, and that was the coach that got in a lot of trouble, the Danton days, and I think his name was, I don't know, I want to say his name, I don't even want to speak his name, but he was the coach on the other team. They had a bench clearing brawl and it was nuts. Like there was guys, I remember Matty Murley was the best kid in the league by far. He was the point leader, and he was wearing a birdcage that drove the Canadian teams crazy, right? So he's out there lighting it up with a birdcage. He's also pretty lippy, and he's with his high voice is like chirping. And that bench clear, like three of their guys got on him and were trying to like literally like chop his fingers off. I don't know if I should tell it. Maybe it's a little gory, but take that out of it. But the best, everybody fought everybody, and it was crazy. The best fight of the night was Jason Guerrero. I don't know if you know Jason Guerrero. He's the coach out Northeastern.
Yeah.
He was sick. He was so good, man. He was a little righty, like fire plug, could fly, could snipe. He was sick. And him and this other guy, they were the same exact.
We had him on the show.
Oh, did you? Sorry, I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah, he was a great guy. He was so nice to me, too. He's such a good person. I just reached out to him a couple months ago. He was actually in Korea at the same time I was. He was doing the Youth Olympics, I believe. So,
exactly. Yep.
It wound up being a couple. I would love to see him again. I haven't seen him since I was 11 years old, but I still remember that fight. He was the other guy was a lefty and Guerrero was a righty. And Guerrero wasn't really a fighter back then, but he kind of he had to go. And it's 19 on 19. You don't really have a choice. He had to scrap, but he scrapped this one guy. And it was the best fight. They went toe-to-toe. It was the only fair fight in the whole bench clear. But the point being was that the junior hockey was that they went from the Metro League and then it turned to the Ontario Provincial. So when I was 12 or 13, I think it was 13 years old, Don Kernan took over the NHL team, the NHL team in out of Rochester. Mm-hmm. And like I got to a place in my game. I was skating with that junior A team every single day. They were in Fulton. So it was seven blocks from my house. So I got to go out and practice with them every day. And, you know, when I was out in practice, I know it wasn't full tilt or anything, but I was doing good enough to the point where Don was like, you might be able to play in the NHL at 13. So I was gonna maybe play a game there, but then it turned into an insurance thing where they're like, hey man, it's like maybe when somebody gets, you know, some 19 or 20 year old gets met, you know, whatever, bent out of shape, they're gonna wind up killing you and we're gonna be in trouble. So they pulled the plug on that. But eventually the next year at 14, I got to play in that Ontario Provincial, which was great at that time because, you know, I played band of majors at 12, so it was 14, 15 year olds, 13, same thing, band of major. And then I didn't have a next step. Midgets weren't an option. So luckily the tier two team was there and I got to play there. And you know, at that time, there's a lot of teams flying me in to see them and stuff in the all. And some USHL teams that were thinking about pulling me in at 14, but I just didn't have to go and travel out because I had the Ontario Provincial League's a very good league. You know, there's a lot of kids going for scholarships and those old overagers that kind of age out of the OHL come down and makes the league very good. So really good competition. And then, you know, at that point, I was still following Timmy's path, and I was like, I want to go. You know, he got drafted to Erie and then drafted in the show. So it all kind of worked out a little bit in the favor, in the sense that I wanted to follow my idol's path, and all those resources kind of landed in my lap. I got a chance to go out and try out for the national development team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got offered a spot. It was awesome, but I didn't need to go, so I didn't go. And there's a chance I was out there with Josh Hennessy. That's where I met Josh Hennessy, who's an unbelievable dude.
Yeah, he's the best.
We only had that 2 week. I think it was like 10-day event together. But we had such a good bond. Like, we've been friends for life, really. And it's not one of those things where it's like it never passed. Time never passed, right? We see each other. It's so cool.
Hockey
such
friends. A good dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, we talk about that all the time, and it doesn't take much. You know, you cut out of the same club.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Often you have that immediate bond, lifelong friends, really, right? Even though it was 10, 12 days. He's a great guy.
Playing against each other, I'm sure, plenty of times battling.
Yeah, no, he's a great hockey player too. His game is sick, and he's such a smart player and everything. And yeah, I just love his personality. It's kind of like really calm and sort of dry humor a little bit, but he's such a good dude. So it's a great. And I also met Chris Bork. We had a camp together out there, and my dad got to hang out with Ray. It was pretty cool. Yeah, they got time. So with Chris, we got a pretty cool path as well. We played World Juniors together, and my dad knows nothing about hockey really. He doesn't care. Like, not, I don't want to say it the wrong way. Not that he doesn't. It doesn't matter. Like, he's just happy if I'm happy, and if I'm working hard, he's happy. You know what I mean? Like, that thing. It's very supportive. But hanging out with Ray Bork was pretty cool. You know, that was that was pretty cool.
Especially just after following his career, and then he wins a cup and all that stuff. It really is. It's amazing. And when you meet Ray, he's just such a normal guy and just talks to you like it doesn't matter who you are. You know what I mean? So that's it's amazing. I was just going to, you know, you talk about playing up all those years and just with the bigger competition. Like, were you a big kid at that age, or was it just like you had the skill, you know, like, were you a kid that, because I coach now, you know, so I have three boys, but you know, I have like a team that they're 2011s, right? So they're getting to that age group where some of the kids are going through puberty, some of the kids aren't, right? So you're really seeing it. And now this year it's like first year checking and stuff. So you start to see that separation. But like you playing as a 12 year old against kids that are like 15, 16, like that's a big jump.
Yeah, I was very mature, you know, mature for my age in that I hit the growth spurt. That was the big thing. When I was 10 to 11, I went, you know, grew like 4 inches and put on like 30 pounds and it was all good. And at that age I had, you know, all the stuff. I had hand-eye coordination. I had body control. I had edge control. I was strong for my age.
Yeah.
And I was fearless. I didn't care. Like I used to go to my brother's football practices. He's an 83 when I was 7, 8 years old. And I would go with no equipment on and run the players and tell them, you know, I want them to hit me. And my dad, he's like, get no helmet on him. I don't care. So I had like a bit of no fear, you know, and that didn't bother me. Older kids, I loved it. I had an older brother. So poking at him and then getting my ass kicked a little bit. Right. That was the lifelong already been. So, you know, doing against other kids was better because there was no, my mom and dad couldn't get too mad and I didn't have to sit in the awkwardness of apologizing and not meaning it.
Right.
it was nice to, you know, do that against other people who wouldn't have to see again. But so that helped me. You know, I was a big kid. I was probably at 12 years old. I was probably about 5'8", 5'9", and 160 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then also being able to have the awareness, like you're such a cerebral player, you know, to absorb a hit, not put yourself in positions to really take a big hit. And then being able to, you know, give a hit and on angles and separate people from pucks. But that's what we talk about a lot. That's a huge skill that is a little bit kind of undervalued, being able to absorb and be aware, you know, for protection, really. And then through necessity, if you're playing up those, you know, that many years.
Yeah, I got my bell rung a couple of times. And, you know, you get like some 14, 15-year-old kid, the hormones and stuff. And it's not like that's what I did pride myself on. And I always prided myself on it and still do when I play men's league, but it's knowing where everybody is.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, big thing I teach now is counting numbers. You know, I always count numbers. The whole time I'm on the ice, I'm counting other team numbers just to know where everybody is and there shouldn't be any blind spots. And then there's also, that's not for hitting. It's also for calculation of a play. You know, I know exactly what numbers are where and that tells me what piece of the chessboard is open. So it's kind of calculation there. And it's, again, I only got caught once really in my career. And that was a dirty, dirty hit when I was 16 in the OHL. Like I got hit 5 seconds after I got to the play. The play should have never happened. I counted the numbers, but this guy came 5 seconds late. Like I couldn't calculate that. He came off a change and was a meathead. I think his name was Adam Smith and he just knocked me. But anyways, point being is that, you know, that like just knowing where everybody is, it's again, part of it's protection, but also it's like, we're thinking ahead of the play and you're trying to get ahead of it. You got to know where everybody is and you know, what the options might be. And just, when I was a young kid, I knew that very well. And I knew how to manipulate players and draw players. And I understood that math, right? If I get two and if I can get three, awesome. I know that somebody's open. And then it's not a blind pass anymore. That's a calculated like area play. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you know how to throw sauce on the puck too, you buy time and space with sauce. When the puck's up in the air, if you have a certain pace on it, you buy time and space and you lead someone into the play versus firing it over. You know what I mean? That like, you just do the math on that, right? The velocity of the puck and the timing, it all changes. But I really figured that out at a young age. And that part I figured out on my own. I just understood because I got really good at shooting it with Donnie Kiernan Jr. at 11 years old. And then once you start scoring a ton of goals, you start drawing attention. And if you have a little bit of selflessness and you're willing to give the puck up, you'll see what kind of plays you can create. And then you start to get obsessed with that part of it. And so, you know, the goals are fun, but it's like, oh man, if I can watch this, watch me draw these three guys into this bad area to get that good area for my teammate. It's, you know, that I kind of, that clicked in for me young too. So I started to have fun with that.
Now you kind of, you know, said that you figured it out kind of on your own, but did you emulate your game after anyone, you know, just watching, you know, you mentioned Tim Connelly and he's a few years older and exceptional player, but any say NHL players that, you know, you kept like looking at and being like trying to, you know, emulate on some area, like drawing players, or did you just naturally do that on your own?
I loved Peter Forsberg.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of, what's the right word? I had a lot of influences that I loved to watch when I could. You know, back then we didn't have all this like instant Instagram and all the highlights. Now you get so much resource, you watch so much. Back then it was like a little bit of snippets on ESPN, but or when you get to stay up late. I love watching Forsberg, the way he reverse hitted, the way he was shifty. I liked Kovalev a lot. I loved his style, and I loved how shifty he was. And back then, if you could be shifty, like, you buy D's feet, like, not like it was so easy to buy D's feet and get them pivoted the wrong way. And as soon as they pivoted the wrong way, they had no footwork to get back. Just a different game a little bit, but that shiftiness of Kovalev. And then I like that, the power of Forsberg with the finesse. Those players influenced me. And then the one that really influenced me on the style side was Fedorov. When they came out with those Nike mitts, and I was begging and begging and begging for those. I wanted those gloves so bad. Remember, my uncle Mike took me to buy gloves, and I was begging. I wound up settling for the Cohos, but I tried to negotiate for an hour to get those Nike mitts at Mackay Sports, but it didn't come through. But I wanted them. But Fedorov was nasty. He just kind of, the way he played, man, it wasn't just about, back then it was all about, for me with him, it was, you know, I was a young kid, I loved his style, but like now I see his height, like, man, he was nasty. Like, he was so good.
He even played shifty. He played D.
Crazy. Yeah. The Russian five, the core they had there was really awesome. But yeah, for me, and honestly, it was, and I love Naslin. I love the Naslin, I think it was Naslin, Bertuzzi, and Morrison line. Yeah. I remember Naslin's like silkiness and like way he created plays. And then, ironically, my first year out of the NHL, I went over to Sweden, and Peter Forsberg was the assistant GM, and Marcus Naslin was the GM of the hockey team for Moto Hockey. So it was like a really cool kind of full circle moment.
That's great.
That's unbelievable.
It's really cool.
Yeah, you talked kind of about the youth path and the OPJHL and everything, but talk about that, you know, I guess that transition. Obviously, you go right up to Mississauga, and you know, as a young kid, obviously 74 points in 65 games. Like, what was that experience like being that, you know, 16-year-old kid? Was it at that time?
It was a big change, but it was amazing at the same time. You know, it's a bit of a shock to leave home so young, but Steve Ludzik and his family, Mary Ann, and their kids, Ryan and Steven, were, they took me in right away, and were just amazing people. Steve Ludzik is a very close friend and still my mentor. I still talk to him to this day. So Steve was amazing, and he did a lot of good things for me. So it was an eye opener, you know, that you're going in. There's, you know, you deal with the pecking order of hockey, which I didn't have to deal. When I was younger, I had to earn my space. I had to do helmets and gloves. And I had to get my butt kicked. And I was lippy too. So I earned some of those locker room boxing matches. but you know, you get to the OHL, and there's like that rank and the pecking order. And it was very foreign to me, because the rank and pecking order stuff never, for me, was in hockey. I never had that inside the locker room. I kind of always, I would say, get a free pass because I was good. You know, I was usually the leading scorer and help us win games. But then they got there, and it was, you know, the older guys are a certain way. And that can take a toll a little bit mentally. It was tough. It was like a big resistance wall to run into. And it was confusing too for me, to be honest with you. At that age, it's like, this has nothing to do with hockey. Like, if I'm stinking it up on the ice and not doing my stuff, then I get it. Like, you know, that's accountability. But when it comes to that stuff, it was so – you know, for me personally, it's good to see the culture change, and I think it's way more accepting. And I love the way, like, Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara talked about, like, everybody's a team. I don't care if you're 18 or not. It's not that. It's accountability for sure, but it's not like, you know what I mean? I'm going to spit my gum on the floor and you pick it up. Like, that's not human. Like, that's not even normal. Like, it's not funny. And that's not teaching you anything either. Just teaches you to disrespect other people. That's not like, that's not shaping anything. Right. So the way that those guys were talking, I think that's awesome at the top level, like the way that trickles down. And you know that how many coaches probably saw that, like, you know, this is the culture I want from you leaders on my team. So kudos to those guys and that kind of stuff. But for me, that was tough. So the hockey part was great. The Ludzie taught me a ton of stuff and was very patient, hard, but patient. And that's, you know, accountability thing was huge, because I'll never speak poorly about Don Kernan, but the one thing it is, that it's all offense in Syracuse. There's no defense. It's like the offense is like getting the puck and you have the puck. That's the defense. So that's the defense is getting the puck and never giving it to them. That's how you play defense. Right. So I didn't know much about my own zone and got exposed a little bit. Like, the OHL is a very good league, right? You're thinking 85 berth is like, you know, Jeff Carter, Corey Perry, Mike Richards, go down the list of 85s. In the league, and it's a very good league. So I got exposed put up my points. I did, but also got exposed in my own zone. So Ledzie really taught me how to be accountable and how to take, you know, a little bit more calculated risk. It makes more sense. And it didn't come from a bad place that I didn't know how to play defense. I'm a centerman, so it's not like I was cherry picking and not in my own zone. It's just really never knew what it felt like to not have the puck for 45 seconds on the shift. Yeah. And that'd be like, you know, stay in position and patient.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, as you go through it, I mean, your point totals and whatnot increased, but you became more of a complete player, you know, along the way. And it's interesting when you talk to kids and you see real life examples, or like maybe when I was coming through, it was like Mike Modano, for example, was, you know, an offensive talent. But then when Ken Hitchcock made him play D, he actually put up some more points and became more of a complete player and they won. You know, it's like a kind of formula. But can you talk about that transition? Like, so just awareness, your offensive awareness translating to like what you learned on the defensive side of it.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. It's about winning. Coming up at a young age, it's you get away with a lot, scoring a ton of points, and coaches want to, I think coaches want to walk a fine line with the skill players, and like, oh, I don't want to, you know, sort of mess him up. If I do this, then he might not score. But I think it's really important that, you know, once as a player, again, you're so focused on the points, but then when a coach really teaches you about that accountability and what it means to the domino effect for everybody else, and that you're part of the team, you're not the team, is one thing. When you're high scoring players, is really gathering that understanding and accepting it. And, you know, again, when you do some really dumb stuff as a high point guy, people sometimes don't hold you accountable. It's like, ah, he'll score us three. I know he gave up that really dumb one, but he'll get us three. When a coach gets, no, that's dumb. And this is why it's dumb. And this is why if you do it, then he thinks he can do it and he can do it and he can do it. There's rope for you, but there's not, you know what I mean? It's not infinite and it's not, you know, at the cost of that, like that doesn't make sense even. So really having those mistakes highlighted was important. And then you kind of like, yeah, that really isn't smart. Like I risked all that if my reward was nothing.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out. And now what? Everybody's going to say great job. So that accountability was really important. And, you know, Ledzie instilled it. And then Dale Hunter was even more so. And Huntsie coaches the game to win. His numbers speak for themselves. I think he's second all time now in wins for a coach. And that's the kind of things where when you get to a coach like Dale, who is very hard, when you get to him, you don't play. Like he makes decisions in game. It's not like politics, it's not anything. It's like he watches the game, he sees the game very well. When he makes an in-game adjustment, it's because it's what the game needs. So if you're a guy that's out there that's going to do this stuff where you think like, oh, I might be able to get away with that. Well, no, you play the right way the whole time, all the time. And it's okay to make a mistake in some regard. But if it's because you're, you know, whatever, trying to cheat the game, you can't trust you and you're not going to play. So that was like a pro lesson coming at 17, 18, right? Yeah. And that came quick.
Did you have any resistance towards that, just being such an offensive guy and that accountability factor? Like, you know what I'm trying to say? Was it like easy for you to kind of look at on video or however the coaching was being done, say, you know what? Oh, that makes sense. Or were you like at the beginning, kind of like, coach, what do you mean? I just had 5 points tonight.
Yeah, it was tough in the beginning. You know, like I had one instance, I remember that one of my first games there from London, I remember the play clearly. I came up, if we're looking at from the net to the neutral zone, we're in the offensive zone, I came up the right side. And I saw my D-man open. There was a lane. And I told him to go back door and I sauce passed it over everybody's head and landed it right on his tape. And I got back to the bench. He's like, don't ever do that again. I was like, it's pretty
nice. It's a pretty cool pass.
Yeah.
But it was like him shaking out the scale because it had to balance out. I had a big adjustment, obviously from 15 to 16 with Ledzie, there was a big improvement, but I wasn't pure proof here. Like there was still holes. Right. So that was, you know, his way is hard love. So it was hard. It was super hard. There was a lot of friction in the sense of like confusion and like, what is going on kind of thing. It was a totally different way. But, you know, it took me a year and kind of get knocked in my butt a little bit. And, you know, a couple of nights I was a grocery stick and, you know, that really you want to play. And if you're not going to do it, you're not going to play. So, you know, the next year we wound up winning a championship. So it's one of those things where it's, yeah, at the time it was a really tough lesson, but at the next year I was, you know, very good in the playoffs. I was reliable. I got to go out for draws under, you know, inside of 5 minutes in the game left. You know, second to Corey Perry in scoring in the playoffs. So it's like it all added up, and that's, you know, that's the investment that he wanted to put in. He didn't need that first year I was there. He didn't really need me, so to speak. You know, we had, you know, Corey Perry, Scott Shepard, you know, some older guys, Dennis Weidman. So it wasn't where the team really needed my offense. It was nice addition. And you can kind of see that in my stats. I went from, I think, 74 points to like 75 points, right? It's only 1 point improvement. Usually it's at that league, it's like, you know, a year like that, you'd have the next year, like Patrick O'Sullivan went, you know, like 95 or 100 points. But it wasn't important about the points. It was important to him to teach accountability and like, that's, this is what it takes to win. And again, fast forward a year later, we win a Memorial Cup and have a very good season. I played really good hockey. It was probably my best hockey I've ever played.
Yeah.
Yeah, just so winning championships, like you said, you know, like just kind of finding that role when you're being relied on to take a important defensive zone faceoff, it really it pumps you up. Or if you have to be able to kill a penalty or in the last minute of a game, I know it's scoring goals. I didn't score many goals, Shrimpy, you know, but but being, you know, being relied on by a coach and your teammates kind of makes you feel like a, you know, a big part of the team in a different way than just filling the net.
I think that's, you know, that feeling of getting called on that for that situation is, it's really like, it fills you up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I got it, boys. I got to go, you know, and then you exactly. go and execute. Yeah. It's sick. Yeah. It's like the boys are pumped that you did it. And okay, you build that trust with your teammates. And that's the best thing is, they, you know, when you come over, they're not going to ever be like, oh boy. Yeah, here goes so-and-so. Here goes Shrimpy. Oh, we're going to get one on us. You know, they're like, yeah, you know, the trust and faith. Yeah. And that leads into other stuff. You know, it kind of breaks down barriers on away from the rink. And you get to know each other better and things like that. So it all kind of encompassing, right? And growing as a group and bonding on. And that the stuff when you do, I think, like, that translates to hockey, from hockey to off ice, is, again, like, when you have that accountability to each other, that trust in each other, that faith. Because that's the end of the day, like, that's what we're all passionate about. We all love is the game. And when we're doing that together and you're doing your job really well and I'm doing my job really well, and it's like everything's kind of kosher and we can just let our personalities fly and get to know each other, and there's, you know, good banter, where if you're not doing those things, it's kind of like freaking Mots, man. He guy never gets the puck. You know what I mean? It's like, he gets it. Yeah. It's like, I don't like that guy. But, you know, it's just, I think that's why those teams bond, those good teams, you know, they do play the play the right way, which is such a vague term, but it's, you know, it's all encompassing. And once you play a long time, you start to realize what that term means, play the right way. And, you know, that's, you know, good teams do it, you know, don't cheat. Centers are low and slow. Wingers are doing their job. Deer move the pockets. Yeah. It's all that stuff that kind of comes together.
Right. Can you walk us through the draft process? Obviously, you know, first round pick with Edmonton, which was obviously amazing, but, you know, I'm sure it was, you know, you always been such a great player. Was it like, was that where you were expected to go? Can you just walk us through kind of that year and that process?
It was a wild year. That year was wild. So I got traded in my first month of the season. There's some stuff in the off season. So it was tricky. Draft year was there. So there's a lot of distractions. I went up getting traded. So I remember to this day, Greg Gilbert, you know, called me in his office. And during, before the trade executed, and he just said, you know, Shrimpy, I just want to tell you, like, I understand you completely. I understand why this is happening from your perspective. He said, I just want to let you know it's going to put up red flags. And I was just like, processed it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I was a young kid and I was like, okay, I didn't really know how to take that. I'm like, this other stuff in the background that's happening doesn't make sense. It's just so distracting and then whatever. So that happened. And at that time, going into the draft year, in some draft boards, I was top three, in some I was top five. So, you know, that year I got traded. So there's, you know, some flags, and then it didn't play much in London when I first, you know, when I got there. So it was more flags. And so all this like kind of negative storm sort of happened. It was really bizarre year, if I'm being honest. It was supposed to be like, you know, awesome and a great experience and exciting. And it was more like doom and gloom and like, what's going on? This feels like the floor is falling out. So, that kind of, you know, I was ranked really high and I had an okay season, but not enough to, you know, five top five numbers or that kind of thing. And I slipped in the draft. So, And I think like the other thing too is, you know, then it comes to combine in the season, at the end of the season, that was something where I was a young kid. And if I could go back, that's probably one day that I don't have any regrets, but that would be one day that I would go back to the draft meetings. I didn't really know how to handle myself in those meetings with some of those questions and the way that they were presented. You know, it's grown men asking you pointed questions and they're kind of angling you a little bit, and you got to play the role and you got to know how to answer them. I've answered with more emotion than with strategy. And I don't think that played well. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. And it, you know, I slipped, but it still got, you know, got first round draft pick, which is it's an amazing accomplishment. And it's hard.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's hard to look at that when you're competitive. You're like, you know, I want that top five. Like I earn that, or I earn it. I don't deserve it. I didn't say what's the right word? I'm not owed it, but I definitely deserve. I've worked. I know how many hours I put in the rink, and I know that my talents are, you know, that guy that got drafted or the guy ahead of you. You're really competitive, and I'm super competitive. So that was something where it took me a long time to, you know, people are like, "Oh, you're first round." I'm like, "Yeah, it's 25th." But you know, now I see it different. It's still right. I came from full New York. That's not that easy to get drafted in the first round of the NHL.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and as far as the draft, you know, you said there's like the distractions, you know, you didn't have the best year that you wanted or whatever, but moving forward, you started lighting it up, you know, with London, you know, and again, you're, you know, winning Memorial Cups, OHL championships. And can you talk about that transition to pro hockey? You know, because we've had guests on and, you know, some have had seamless transitions, some have had very difficult ones, had to work for it. Can you just talk about that first experience going into pro hockey?
Yeah, it's a big jump. You know, it's a weird time when I jumped into pro because I got drafted and then the next year was the lockout. So going to training camp, there was only rookie training camps. There was no NHL. So my 19-year-old, after my 19-year-old year, that was my first camp. And, you know, that was like coming in there for fitness testing was like the biggest eye opener. Like Ethan Morrow, Stevie Steos, you go down the list, like almost everybody, Jared Stahl, like these guys pull their tarps off and you're like, oh, that's like a grown ass man. Like, this is not junior no more. You know what I mean? Like, we had a couple guys in London, you know, Mark Mathot was just, you know, shredded, whatever. He was like 6'2", 6'3", 220 and like ripped in junior. But like, that's one guy. Like every guy in the room was, you know, putting up whatever, 280 on the cleans and this and that. So it was an eye opener of like, okay, off ice is a thing, like a very important thing. And then, you know, strength. So that was the biggest thing, you know, that camp. And then again, on the ice, you get out there with those guys with that strength, like those stick battles. I remember one of my first preseason games was against Dallas and Mike Modano, and I had zero chance of winning a draw. He was so strong and so fast. I was like, geez, I'm like that. So for me, it was like just seeing the little details that add up. And then people pre-warn you and they say, you know, when you go to pro and, you know, it's just like the little kids, when you're trying to tell them what's coming down the road, they almost have to see it for themselves and experience for themselves. It's no different when you're 17, 18. I feel, at least for me, it's like you got to kind of, there's a meme, I can't say it's a kid, it's F around and find out.
Yeah.
You got to kind of go through that on your own in some place. So those little things was that moment, you know, it's like, okay, these guys are in sick shape. And then like the little things as a sentiment, your face-offs do matter. You know, before it was like, you got to win your draws. Like, oh, I'll just get it back if I lose it. You know, it kind of had that confidence. Well, in the show, you lose it, you don't get it back. You spend 45 seconds in your zone, and then when you get the puck, you're gassed and you got to get off. So the little details started to really shine to me when I turned pro. And then, my first year was in the minors. And that's a whole different thing. Like, that's the jungle, right? Like, everybody's so close to the show in their mind, and they're going to, you know, chew their own arm off to make it and block pucks with their face. And it was just the sort of urgency and the seriousness got tuned up really high. And, you know, it was an eye opener. I mean, the game doesn't change. There's still two nets. It's the same shape, but the urgency turns up and the seriousness turns up. And in all regards, you got to grow up fast, and it's time to put your big boy pants on and take hockey really serious. It's, you know, studying your game and investing in stuff like staying after and taking draws or grabbing any kind of, I think for me at the AHL level, grabbing any kind of information you can from those coaches. You know, we had Dan Bylsma and Todd Richards. two guys that had careers and played and had a lot of knowledge and information. So it was a great resource. So, but at first, it's like, you know, same thing, resistance a little bit. And then you're like, okay, let's see what I can kind of gain out of this. And you don't have to have all the answers on your own. Other people can help you. And, you know, that took me a minute, but once he got there, it was a good experience and had great people like Dennis Bonvy, as veterans on our team. Yeah. Wayne Nazardine. We had a really cool group of guys, Matt Karkner. The list goes on. You can mention, you know, Max Talbot was there as a young guy, but we had a cool core in Wilkes-Barre, and those guys, a guy like Dennis Bonvy was a big mentor to me, honestly, to see like the sacrifice he would make towards his body to play the game, that passion. And, you know, that was one of his last 2 years playing. He fought like 15 times that year. He didn't have any ACL in either leg. Like, he had no ACLs. And he'd been around a long time. So all the young bucks had wanted to challenge
they want a shot at the title. Yeah.
A shot at the title. And he showed and he danced with them and he won all of them. So
right.
The point being is like Bones, the way that kind of like commitment and passion for the game and for his teammates was something really amazing to see. And just little things throughout the year, I got to kind of grow as a player and off the ice too. He looked after me. That's the thing. You're 20 years old. You go from being in a billet family. Now you're on your own. You're in an apartment. You got to make your own food. You got to set your own curfews. You gotta decide when you can go play with the poker with the boys and not. But it's a big learning curve, and how to balance the freedom of being on your own with also keeping your goals, you know, in sight and staying focused is really important as a young guy. I think if anybody listens and wants advice, I think that's really important. It's easy when you're young to get, when you get that mass amount of freedom, it's what do you do with it? And it's kind of similar to when kids go from high school to college and the first year is a gong show, right? Usually.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't go, but you guys can probably speak to this.
That's funny you say it, like Dennis Bonvy. I remember going, I went down there my senior year at UNH. I played a couple games in Lowell, and then I went down there as like a black ace for the playoffs. And the first day of first practice, and there was a couple other Boston guys, Ryan Lannon, guys like that. And they're like, hey, yeah, Bone said we're going to go play golf after. I'm like, me? Like, what do you mean? Like, I just got here. Like, I don't have clubs. Like, yeah, no, Dennis said, not like, I remembered him fighting for the Bruins at the time. And you know, I'm sorry, not at the time, like years prior. And like, wow, I'm like going golfing with Dennis Bonvy. Like, this is like, what an unbelievable guy. And like you said, culture and leadership, and I'm sure some of the things you went through as a youth hockey guy, and it was just different. But he was a guy that just embraced that team factor and just being a good person, which is huge. And that's why he's still working in the game today, scouting, player development, all that stuff.
Yeah. I saw him last year at the World Championships in Riga. So it was great. Same thing like I talked about with Hennessy, but Bones, I hadn't seen Bones in years, and there's like nothing past. It was so awesome and just a cool, yeah. It was great to see him. And then he immediately, immediately passed me the puck, essentially, like, and to use an analogy, but try to tee me up with DJ Smith and like, you got to get Shrimpy to your camp to work with the guys kind of thing. It was just like, it was amazing. Once you're a teammate, you're always a teammate.
That's right. So you had some success, you know, throughout your AHL career and, you know, kind of finding your game, getting some sniffs with the Oilers, and we became teammates. You had played a bunch of games the year before I got there, but one thing that we became teammates in 2010, and I always was impressed with your practice habits, meaning your creativity in just a simple drill, like where I would, you know, you're just going through the motions sometimes and you just can play a 2-on-1 or whatnot, but I always told people, like, you're very cerebral and the way you look at the game. And, you know, I saw it firsthand in practice. And that's something that I always try to emphasize to kids. You know, it's not just because you draw a drill up a certain way. Yeah, we want you to stay on maybe this side of the ice so you don't smash into someone. But you got to try and turn your brains on and add some creativity on your own. Like, I'm not going to tell you everything to do. But that was one thing that I always remember in practice where you would just be like, have – you know, a little hesitation here, a little deception here. And you were trying things that not many guys would be doing. So did you pick that up along the way or again, going back to like just figuring it out on your own?
Figuring out on my own. And I think like the big thing with that is like in those drills, so you make them up as a coach, but so as a player, like, okay, you make me up the drill, give me the framework, and then I'm going to go around and play around in that. And if, again, like you said, like as long as I don't go way outside the box, like go across the ice and run into everybody, like inside of that time frame and that side of that window, I can, it's a battle, like a 2-on-1 drill. It's a battle between you and me and the, my line mate, and then you, me and my line mate and the goalie, right? So what kind of different angles can I create? What kind of different plays can I create? How can I expose that D's triangle? How can I buy the goalie's feet? These little things are what I'm thinking about when I'm coming down. Let's say the right side. If I hit a little pause, and I'll talk about the pause to go back to Fedorov. I remember the goal. I think it was against the Washington Capitals where he drove the puck insanely hard down the right side. He hits a pause, breaks, and he hits like this pause break. And then the D backs up and the goalie sinks in the net and he goes bar down shelf. I think it was against Kolzig. You maybe want to fact check me on that. But I remember that. And so I thought about, I always saw that play and I'm like, that's brilliant. Like a little bit of speed and then pull up. And then again, both you sink. The D sinks. So if he sinks, then I got all this. I got more time, more space. And then the goalie's going to sink too because I'm coming at him with that pace. And this is something I also use in my shootouts. And I never was a shootout guy ever. I only had one in junior, but I just thought about that. The chess, the cat and mouse game with the goalie of like how to mess with their gap. And for the goalies, it's mess with their gap in the sense of like where they are in the crease, and with the D, it's, you guys know, like, you know, like your gap is everything. So how can I buy that? Coming down the right side, if I change pace, I'm always trying to calculate and see where your triangle is, the D. And if I can get you to pull you over, I'm giving a half breakaway. And the one thing I want to say is like on for the kids listening on 2-on-1s is that there's no rule that you have to pass on a 2-on-1. So once you get down on a 2-on-1, once you go over the top of the circles, that's a grade A. A shot from inside the top of the circles, right in the middle of the ice, inside the house, inside the action zone, is a grade A. So if you have it, take it. There's no rule you have to pass. You see the young kids now, they're coming down the whole time down the ice. They're staring at the pass. I'm like, why? You split this up. You split it in half. You got a half breakaway on your side and a half breakaway on the other side. What's the D doing now? And what are you doing to mess with the D? Okay, you're doing anything. You're changing the angle of how you attack. So what I like to do sometimes too is I like to come down over the blue line and go right at the D. And now he's like, oh, man. So what I do is if I can go at the D before the top of the circles and I get that puck over, I've given my teammate a half breakaway from the top of the circles down. I force that D. What are you going to do? You know, and I have, you know, the things that you have to have in your bag. You have to have baby sauce. You have to have patience. You have to be able to identify where the triangle is. You have to be able to identify your teammate's pace. If your teammate's pace is below, you know, he's outside the blue line, then it doesn't make sense to go and attack that D. Now you made it a 1-on-1.
Right.
But if you got the right time and you check off those boxes, right, you see, okay, that guy's there. He's got a good, you know, good pet tempo with me. I'm going to go right at that D and now I'm going to make you make a decision. And now when you say the D backs up, and he's scared. He's like, oh, I better go to the other guy. Now I've just improved my shooting angle. Now I'm standing right in the middle of the ice with the best face of the net you could possibly get. It's the biggest face of the net you could possibly get is right down home plate, right? So little things like that on 2-on-1s are you kind of just being creative. And then I started, you know, once in a while I get cocky. I like to come down the right side and hold the puck on my left hip and I'll hold it off and the D lunges with their stick and I'll throw it through my legs and kick it with my foot through the D's triangle. And that's one where you get the guy that you don't like that week and you want to make an ass out of him.
Yeah, exactly.
But you hang out of that one. Don't try that all the time. It's just that's for special occasions. And you just want to say, hey, I'm skilled, buddy. But no.
Oh, that's awesome.
But there's a lot of stuff there, like just being creative and also like that. You just try things out. Again, that genuine curiosity and sort of playing around with the game and not being so stiff. So that's, you know, it's really important.
That's great advice.
Yeah, it's great advice, especially just not being so robotic out there. And like you said, just whether it's I have to come down and just make the pass, right? It's just I think in Mots and I, we talk about it all the time. It's just that hockey IQ and thinking the game and watching the game. I think so much of the things that I've heard you talk about is just you just like thinking it and really just like, you know, like diving into the game of hockey and watching players as, you know, idols, right? Guys that really influenced you and just picking those little things that they did. And now like, okay, how can I put that, you know, how can I put that tool in my toolbox and utilize it?
Yeah, definitely. It was all imitation, really. I didn't take credit for most of it. You know, the hard work and the you know, the hard work and dedication to it, I take credit for it, but all, a lot of it was imitation. You know, I remember Mark Messier was the first one, the right wing snapshot against the New Jersey Devils. I took that shot a million times. And then Joe Sakic was sick at that same shot, low blocker down the right side, that like hop on his left foot snapper. I saw that shot. You know, that Fedorov shot, saw that. So I started playing around with those things. You see those things and you know, if you understand, and when you start to play around, you'll start to understand for yourself. I can sit here and talk about it, and I'll tell you all the details, why that move from Fedorov worked. He drove the puck, he messed with the gap, back to D up, blah, 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 right? All that stuff. But until you go out and do it like 100 times as a player, because what happens is when the players try to do it, you know, if you tell a kid to go do that, they go to do it, and then the puck, they forget to handle the puck. They hit the brakes, and the puck goes in the corner. And then they go, and they try to do it again, whatever. The D's too close. So there's little things they need to play around with and find out. So it's really that, you know, kind of, I guess it's imitation and watching, and then it's about, you got to practice all these things. I think it's super important. And there's no magic pill. I think you guys have talked about this before too. There's no magic pill. Reps is king, and practice time is, you know, practice and reps are king. So that's what's going to get you there. Someone like us could teach you, hey, this is some of the stuff, you know, how to attack out of a corner or how to attack a D's triangle in 2-on-1. That's value and getting them to that information. And then it's for them to go play around with and really, you know, just have those reps and do different things and fail and fail and fail. And you'll find what works.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. Awesome advice. Before we let you go, we want to hit you with the My Hockey Rankings question of the week. We know you had the, you know, some of the silkiest mitts around, but what was the, what type of curve did you use? Like what's, you know, what stick pattern and what would you suggest now for young kids?
And what type of lie, yeah, I was going to say, what type of lie was that, like a big thing? So like you break it down from what you use to what you recommend kids using.
Yeah. So my big thing is my curve was the Lindstrom curve. I started off with the Coffee 50-30 Sherwoods, which was nasty. Yeah. And then it was the McInnis. I think they changed names around them, McInnis. Yeah. And then it turned into a Lindstrom Focus Flex, Easton Focus Flex with the Z-Bubble. That was my favorite stick of all time.
So that was awesome.
It was sick setup. It was dirty. It looked cool too, right? And the Z bubbles were money.
They were. Yeah, that was more of a heel curve.
Yeah, the Lindstrom was a big heel. It was a wedge.
Yeah, I had a wedge. Linden.
Trevor. Yeah. Linden. Yeah, it was similar to the Linden. Yeah.
So sorry,
guys. It's kind of like what you're still rocking now with your old Eastons that when we're using skills.
You still got Eastons?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's still got. Yeah. That's a whole. We could do a whole nother podcast on that stuff, Shrimpy.
Lots
of gear.
Yeah, I still agree with it too.
Back to the My Hockey Rankings question of the week, and we got to keep it on the rails.
So the biggest thing for me is where your hand positions are as a player, and blade on the ice is super important. So like I played with a guy like Alex Shemsky. He used to have like, I don't know what his lie was exactly, but there's about this much hockey blade on the ice. That being said, he was also the most skilled guy and had probably some of the best puck control that I've ever seen, the way he used to push the puck. And his hands were really high up into his body, and he liked to be tight. You know, I like a lot of blade on the ice. I play with my hands below my belt line, and I try to keep my hands down there, so I like a lot of blade on the ice, and that kind of lie wouldn't fit for me. So it's about the blade on the ice and you know, how much contact is there. Where your hand positions are matter. Where you like to hold your hands, and for certain age kids, like that's a feel thing, and that's not a coachable thing. Where do you like it? And where are you playing? What are your habits? So, that happened a couple of times as a kid, right? You get obsessed with the stick, how it looks. You go and buy it, and you're like, this is awful, right? You just can't even do anything with it. I went from going bar down, I can't even get the puck off the ice, and it turns out to be the lie. Your hands are too high or too low. So like that, those things are really important. And I think there's a ton of centers now, like the hockey shops now, they got all those shooting zones. You can try all the patterns. You can try all the stuff. It's super important, I think, you know, especially with the cost of sticks now, to actually do that, to invest 10 minutes of time to go save yourself, your kid having a $400 stick he doesn't like.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's common sense, but it, you know what I mean? I think it's worth it. I think it's worthwhile. Yeah. We were in Ottawa in February, and they were all there trying all the sticks. So it was cool. It's good to see that, but that's, you know, again, with the cost of sticks, like you got to try them first because that's expensive to wind up in the garage and just sit there.
Yeah.
Well, hey, dude, we really appreciate your time. We really respect the work you're doing over in Hong Kong, and
Yeah, first ever guest from Hong Kong. That's for sure, Mark.
Yeah, I love it. Hey,
bringing the berries out, Hong Kong.
Yeah, shaping the youth.
It's unbelievable.
Doing great work, though. Like we talked about, you know, you can just hear the passion in your voice when talking about certain things that, you know, are very important. And, you know, these kids over there, you know, that you're exposing some really good hockey knowledge to. So keep up the great work. And we really appreciate your time.
No, I appreciate it, guys. It's awesome to get on here. I've been following you guys, so you guys have been doing great stuff. And I love the stuff you're doing for the hockey community and the growth and development. So it's very valid information, and I don't think anybody doubts that, but just to validate it, I love what you guys talk about on a weekly basis. I love the reels and stuff and seeing the quick information, because that's what it's about now. But the stuff you guys put out is awesome. I think it's super important for the kids and for the growth of the game. So thanks for doing that for everybody, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, Shreppy, we'll have to get you on again, because we, you know, we still have a ton to talk about, but we've taken enough of your time and getting late here and time to wrap things up. But this has been awesome. Really, thank you. Thank you again for jumping on.
I want to ask one thing, though. Was it your brother? Was it Keith or Chris that got the wrong tattoo on their back? I remember at World Junior tryouts, this seeing those 2 months. And your brother, I just want to talk about Keith first. I remember him showing up, and I remember seeing him, and he comes out, and he's like shaggy, right? Like, his gear is not fitting right. His cage is dangling all over the place. He looks like he kind of looks like rough, right?
Yeah.
And he comes out, and he just starts dancing the blue line, dancing all over the place. And I'm like, oh, man, this guy's sick. Then I get in the room, and him and Chris have got the same tattoo. I'm starting to look at it. I'm like, that doesn't look, is this supposed to be the same? But I wanted to bring that up. Take a shot at your brother.
Yeah, Keith. Yeah, I think the story is Borky went first. They were obviously like 16 at the time.
I love it.
He's like, give me the same thing as him. And they started doing the BEO, and then it was like, whoa. No, they made it into a cool, like, tribal thing or something. It all worked out, you know?
That's well, Keith, I hope you don't mind that. Yeah, be careful.
Oh, no, it was awesome. Awesome. He's not afraid to tell it. But, no, this is great stuff. And we'll have to chat again soon and bring you on. I'd love to have you on for a mailbag, because we get so many questions. And it'd be good to have another, you know, have you jump on and just, like, you dive into some of this stuff. It'd be fantastic.
Cool. Anytime, boys. Let me know.
All right, buddy.
Awesome.
Cheers.
All right. Thanks, we'll see you.
All right. Thank you. That interview was brought to you by Colony Grill. I was just down in New York last weekend, and Ryan Whitney, actually, Motsy, said to me, he goes, dude, I drove down just so I could stop at Colony and pick up some pizzas for the way home.
Veteran I'm like, move.
Veteran. I'm like, that's a veteran move if I've ever seen one. I'm like, I'm going to opt for the flight because I got to be back for a lacrosse game. But, you know, that just goes to show you about the dedication for, you know, he probably wanted to bring his golf clubs and a couple other factors. But he had been down there for a couple of days. But again, he's like, dude, I'm stopping at Colony and picking up a couple pies for the ride home. He's like, I'll bury at least one on the ride. And then, you know, I'll get a couple other and reheat them watching the games on Sunday. So it just goes to show you that if you're heading down I-95 in that Connecticut, Westchester area, if you're in Maryland, Virginia, or Florida, there's probably a Colony Grill close by. Bring in the team, stop by on a road trip, or pick up a steaming hot oil pie on the way to the rink. You'll agree that Colony Grill lives up to that hot oil hype. To find the nearest location near you, head to colonygrill.com.
Yeah, I'm legit hungry right now. So it always happens when
we call you're starving.
Starving. But as far as getting down there, we keep threatening. So let's make that happen, man.
Let's get it done.
Maybe
let's get
a playoff game.
Yes, that'd be fantastic. Hey, great interview with Trempy there. He was a treat and just a hockey savant. Really thinks the game, very high hockey intellect, and it was good chatting with him. Can't wait to have him back on for a mailbag episode. He'll dive into some things for sure.
Yeah, he's a great guy. You can tell the passion that he has, like we were saying, passion for the game, and just like how everything works. Like, not everyone's brain is going to work like his, but it's just interesting about like counting numbers and being aware, not just to protect yourself, but also to make plays and you know, have that awareness so that you can understand the flow of the game. And but like he mentioned that to me one other time about counting, and like I keep people in front of me, you know, it's that's the D thing. But like as a forward, it's all around you. So you have to, if you're going to use that tactic, then you have to be really shoulder checking and understanding where people are consistently on the ice. But
awareness is huge. It really is.
Yeah, I love it. Great guy, and he's doing great things for the game. He's growing the game over there, and can't wait to have him back on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and anybody.
What a pair of mitts.
What a pair of mitts. I mean, the
look at some of his highlights. You'll be impressed.
Never mind his numbers that he did put up. And he's talking about having bad years, scoring a point a game in the OHL, and then it's like the next year, you know, 60 games played, 90 points the next year. You know, 52 games and 150 points. Like, it's amazing the numbers that he put up in juniors and then even at the pro level, and had a long, long run overseas as well. And we didn't even get into that. So we'll have to talk more with him about it. But before we wrap things up here, I want to shout out the, you know, new coach up at Cushing Academy, Ryan Bork. Got the job up there, obviously, you know, about a month and a half or so ago. It was announced that Paul Pearl was leaving, which was a little bit of a surprise. But I was very excited to see that Ryan get the head coaching job. I know just in talking to people around the school and people in the hockey world, like there was a lot of really, really good candidates that put in for the job. And I'm excited for Ryan. He's a young kid. He obviously played for a long time, comes from a long hockey, you know, historian of a family and loves the game. I got to spend some time with him out in Michigan a couple of weeks ago when I was there for nationals, and he was really excited about it and to kind of get back home and get back to where everything really, you know, started and shaped him. So he's pumped. We'll have to get him on, Motz, and chat with him. He's over, I believe, right now at the U18 Worlds. He's coaching the national development program, and maybe when he gets back, we can kind of recap that trip and now going to, you know, he's going to be a Penguin. He's getting back. He's waddling back to Ashburnham.
The old waddle, the Penguin waddle. Yeah, no, I'm super happy for him and super happy for the kids to, you know, have someone who's going to be so energetic and well-versed and, you know, not only, you know, that he played, but his coaching, you know, experience lately and understanding the fact that that's where it started for him. He knows how impressionable the kids are and he'll know how to relate to them. So, super excited for him and super excited for the program out at Cushing. So we'll definitely get him on and chat him up and see what he's thinking.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right, Motz, that kind of wraps things up here. Great episode. Great chatting with Robbie Shrimp, and we're looking forward to tuning in for the mailbag next week. So make sure you keep sending those questions in on social media or sending us emails. And there is still some room. We get the defenseman camp that's starting up in July. So if you are interested in that, send us an email, rinkshrinks@gmail.com. That's for elite level, you know, call it high school prep players. So if you're interested, reach out and we can chat about that. We want to get a really good group that we're going to be able to work with in the summertime. And, you know, we got a few other things going on. So looking forward to next week, looking forward to, you know, watching more playoff hockey and see what happens in the, you know, the first round here. Cause it's a great time of year.
Yeah. And as we're recording, the Bees pulled out a 4-2 win. So they're up 2-1.
There we go.
In the Toronto series. But yeah.
Now they got to wait up in Toronto for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Monty wasn't happy. Like, I thought we were the home team.
Right. They got to hang out up there and then play Saturday night. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm going to be able to couch it up and watch some late games there. But great episode. Always a pleasure to chat hockey with you know, an ex-teammate and someone who really thinks the game. And so it was good to have Shrimpy on. And this weekend, we don't have much going on, so it's going to be probably a little yard work.
Nice. And,
yeah, maybe some golf. We're going to give it a go. The old wrenches a swing.
There you go. All right. Once again, this show is presented by Bet Online, and it's time to cue the Rink Shrink Shuffle, Jersey.